show. I am Mare Watt. That is ohmtown.com. I stream here on Twitch, and I'm over on YouTube as well, and there is a podcast. You can just do a search of pretty much anywhere that hosts podcasts, and I should be there. If not, then let me know, and I'll make sure that I get listed there as well. But for sure, Apple and Google is there. So I had thoughts and I wanted to start talking about them, but kind of got sidetracked. You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about this Amber Heard, Johnny Depp trial anymore, but the defense side is apparently going out and talking about it quite a bit. And it's all the rage on Twitter. It's all the rage on YouTube. It's in certain circles. I mean, obviously, if you've never expressed any interest in this, then it probably wouldn't even show up on your radar on YouTube in particular. It doesn't really get talked about on Twitch all that much because Twitch doesn't really engage in like social politics as a domain. I mean, it's a ramification of streaming. But normally it's just like live stream fails, that kind of thing. Anyway, my point is that the trial is over, but people are still talking about it. And the defense side is saying that they won in the UK, but they didn't win in the UK. Who was sued was the Sun. And Depp lost the defamation case in the UK because he sued, I think, the wrong parties. It really should have been this suit and then the UK suit because, and even then, it's not really the Sun that lied. It wasn't the media that lied. It was the media that took at face value another party's claims and didn't really, in my opinion, didn't vet those claims adequately, and thus the win for the defense side. But it wasn't Heard. It was the Sun that was sued, not Heard. It's my understanding of it. Largely before my time, mainly because it's a different area of law. It's a different area of the world at the time. I wasn't paying attention to Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. It just happened to be that this was a defamation case like the one in the UK, except the one in the UK was suing the Sun about its statements that it made relying on others. And not others, but one. And instead of suing Heard directly, Depp went after the Sun. Because that's the one that he wasn't going scorched earth, you know. He was just trying to defend himself from these accusations. And you can't sue the Sun and have Heard shut down because of the claims being a lie. But adequate due diligence, I think, would have prevented this article from being made. So they relied on the statements of someone else. The Sun relied on the statements of somebody else and thus ended up winning, right? Against Depp. It wasn't Heard that won against Depp. And while I think that the statements that were made were horrible, horrible. It's a different animal between actual abuse and these statements being made by Heard saying that Depp made these statements or did these things. There's too much he said, she said. And I've intervened in what amounted to a domestic violence situation where I separated the two, told one to go home, got the keys back for the other so that they could leave, et cetera, right? I stepped in and I stopped it, and I end up literally in my rearview mirror as I'm leaving, I see them get back together. So toxic relationships exist, and you know, that dependency on each other for whatever stimulation exists that requires a person to come back to an abusive relationship, it existed. In my statements previously, again, are that I think they were both really bad for each other, and should have separated a whole lot sooner than what happened. So how about, that's the last that I will ever talk about this, trial. I think that it really is, it's not really past its prime because it's drawing attention to domestic violence, intimate partner violence. But it's a deeper thing than just one person acting out on another person. There's a whole lot more to it. And it's a societal issue. And so I may end up talking about the societal issues of things like this, and how the tech, it can solve this problem to a degree. The person that's being abused has to know that they can walk away. And if they have to document something in the process, then do it. But they've got to leave. They've got to walk away. They have to, and it shouldn't be on them. You know, the abuse is criminal. Physical abuse, even psychological abuse, when it rises to a certain level, is criminal. And I think that people should pursue it without a doubt. Your voice isn't silenced, regardless of the gender. It's just not, you're not silenced. If you can record it, record it. If you can't, your abuse can be recorded in some way. It's just not possible to hide it adequately. I mean, you have people that you can talk to. You have pictures that you can take. You can document it if that's what's needed. But that's why I say that the moment that you are abused, just walk. It isn't a temporary thing. Most people that are abusers don't wake up the next morning and go, oh, okay, I just won't do it. Because they have poor coping skills. They don't have the ability to stop. Now, there's a huge difference between somebody yelling and screaming and throwing something. That's poor coping skills. But when they start hitting you, when they start doing things that are against your will, then it's criminal. I mean, they need to be shut down because they will end up doing it to somebody else. You know, even if you do walk, there's going to be something else. So it needs to be documented and it needs to be stopped. So please stand up for yourself, and know that there are resources out there that will help you walk away and get away clean. So I hope in your region, because it's always different, I don't know of any national, highly placed location, organizations that can help anybody anywhere, either domestically in the United States or foreign, you know, overseas. I have no idea, but there are always resources for you in a country that actually has it. Otherwise, well, there's other issues involved. So, okay, with that in mind, I'm just going to step off that soapbox. I'm going to get into today's news. This stream is both, I like doing a little intro, kind of getting a little of my attitude out there, I guess, my perception of things. And so I hope that you survived past that little soapbox and we can talk about the news. There's been a lot of stuff that came out of WWDC. I wrote some stuff down, but there are so many others out there that are much deeper ingrained. I'm kind of the, you know, 10,000 miles, but only, you know, an inch deep. I'm more about trying to drive awareness of issues, of things, and talking about them in that three-part concept of business, technology, and society. So if you want to know minutiae of things, follow the news. It'll take you over to, follow my links. It'll take you over to the actual providers of the information. I watched WWDC. To me, it was somewhat lackluster. They dropped some hardware, but they didn't drop the hardware that I was hoping for. I pretty much knew that that was going, I knew it wasn't going to happen. But there was always that really like remote chance. It's basically, WWDC is all about the software. It's all about at least knowing what the hardware is about. But it's mostly about the software. And so they dropped new M2 chips, which basically is killing the M1 platform. So if you have an M1, expect its value to decline when you resell it. Prices are going up for the M2 a little bit. I think like $200, I think, for the M2 MacBook Air. Total redesign of the case. That is something that I knew was happening. Upgrades and whatnot. A lot of integration, convergence is what I would call it, where one device works with another device. So the iPhone now works as your camera webcam on a MacBook, or even, I have to look into that now. I just kind of triggered myself into thinking, going down a spiral of, can I use my iPhone as my iPad camera and use that convergence, because it now has a feature where you can use, I'm looking at notes, looking at, sorry, I think that there is a way that you can use your iPhone for a webcam. And one of the features that it has apparently is that it can look straight down because of the wide angle lens. It splits the picture in two. One is facing you and the wide angle is facing down, based on what I saw. That said, it's a whole lot of operating system stuff. So, I wouldn't even, somewhere in here will be links that'll take you over to places like Mac Rumors or Apple Insider. But let's get into the general news for Hometown Daily News Show for June 7th. I should have said this way back at the beginning, 2022. It's episode 158. And I don't have a title or anything like that because I don't know what it is yet. I read the news as I go through the 20 selected articles that I have previously, in the last 24 hours, I've selected a cohort of articles, but I haven't read them. So you get to see the reaction as I go through them all at the same time. So let me do something real quick. Okay. Whoa. Okay. Let's see. Hometown aggregates news. That's what hometown.com is. And then I talk about it live here on the stream. And then obviously it gets turned into a podcast and a YouTube channel. There's six main categories: create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology. And from there, I end up talking about it. So the first article, he says 15 minutes into the stream, is about Fuse Group acquiring El Ranchito VFX firm, known for work on Mandalorian and Game of Thrones. So Fuse Group has added another pillar of its strategy to assemble a diversified collection of visual effects firms with the acquisition of Madrid-based El Ranchito, known for its work on such fantasy blockbusters as The Mandalorian, Game of Thrones, and Stranger Things. Let's go over to the source of this news, and that is Variety.com and Cynthia Littleton. Let's see what else might be in this article. Backed by EagleTree Capital, aims to be a large-scale, full-service provider of VFX services with reach and expertise in media, major media markets in Asia, Latin America, Europe, and other markets. So I, when it comes to this kind of stuff, this mergers and acquisition stuff, what is the impetus of somebody doing a merger and acquisition, if not to get it and then chop off what is deemed redundant materials and in-house resources of it, right? So you get that. But with lower numbers of competitors, prices always increase. I've never once seen, at least anecdotally, you know, maybe there's some data out there that I haven't seen that suggests that mergers and acquisitions leads to benefits. But I think that I have yet to see anything that says, no, it's great for stakeholders. It's great for the receivers of the benefits from it being in-housed. But competition drives innovation. Competition drives lower prices to consumers. So this is every merger or acquisition that I've ever seen is either you're going to chop off all of the stuff, sell it to somebody else, and make that money so that you can invest in another merger and acquisition and chopping it up. Lots of companies do that. And they take certain elements of it. So it's an acqui-hire or something like that, right? Or it's a merger, and then they start cutting off what is deemed fat. But the customer always pays. The consumer always pays more at the end of this because they have to recover the expense of buying that company. I don't like it as a consumer, as a business consultant, as a business owner. Fine. But as a consumer, I just really don't like it because service suffers, feature set suffers, price increases, the consumers suffer because of mergers and acquisitions. The company now is a single point of failure for everybody that is involved in this, because now instead of that company, the other company being able to be as nimble, they're now leveraged for some other merged company. And I've talked to a few people about it, and that's basically what it comes down to, that it's better for them internally, but not necessarily the consumer. Let's see. One thing that's happening more and more is that projects scale and scale. There's no end to utilizing visual effects, Altano said. All the studios expect us to respond to that growth and deliver on time. For a VFX studio, 400 to 500 artists are able to tap into potentially 200 to 300 artists, all ultimately led by the same leadership. That's significant. All right. Interesting. I'm not quite sure what to make of that statement. All the studios expect us to respond to that growth and deliver on time. For a VFX studio of 400 to 500 artists to be able to tap into potentially 200 to 300 artists, all ultimately led by the same leadership. That's significant. Okay. Somebody try and explain that to me. Come to the next stream and try to explain that statement to me. We're excited to become part of the Fuse Group, said Berger. I think that's how they pronounce their last name. Who is managing director of El Ranchito. We have common ethos with similar long-standing approaches to visual effects work, and our shared goal is to offer top-notch VFX services wherever clients most need them. We know this partnership is the right next step for us in achieving that shared vision. Yeah, I don't see it. But we're not going to know about the machinations. If anybody is in that organization, that would be great to talk to. So let's continue on to the next article. It's in the continuity report, which is about movies. This is Ms. Marvel brings Into the Spider-Verse energy to charming, refreshing new heroine. TV review. I don't know. I think in this day and age, we can just refer to everybody as hero. Strike that. I'm not sure if it makes a difference to most people. And I'm not going to make a thing out of it. So, Iman Vellani plays Kamala Khan in Disney Plus's joyous new Marvel series, or Marvel series, depending on who you are. It says that it's wild to realize this is the article. This article was by Carolyn Framke, by the way, over at Variety.com. It says, or they say, it's wild to realize while watching Ms. Marvel that the studio's newest heroine would be about 2 years old in 2008, the year Iron Man kick-started Marvel's sprawling cinematic universe as we know it. Yeah, so Marvel came out of comic book obscurity, I guess. I mean, comic books have always been popular, and they're just, it's graphic novels in general. I mean, they're just huge, and but they were relegated until Iron Man, at least I agree with this article, until Iron Man came out, it was largely off everybody's radar. But this came out like just gangbusters. It was amazing. And I instantly fell in love with the MCU. I used to collect comic books when I was much, much younger, but I fell out of love with them, mainly because I think of movies and multimedia in general and technology in general, where I stopped reading regular books and embraced more music and more movies. It says now, some 15 years later, they're getting their own shows to do the same thing. Now, let's see here. So, I haven't watched Ms. Marvel yet, but basically, my understanding is, hold on a second. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, I don't want to waste your time, in silence as I hunt this down. Anyway, my understanding is that she is, her upbringing is Muslim, and that she is coming into her superpowers, and she learns how to control them. I'm gonna end up watching this here, probably this week. But let's see. Still, it's undeniably refreshing to see an origin story from the perspective of a Muslim Pakistani American whose only role in the first wave of Marvel movies might have been handing Captain America a sandwich from behind a bodega counter. Whether exploring Kamala's life at school, in the mosque with friend Nakia, or at home with her mother, father, and brother, the series makes her specific corner of the world feel fleshed out before too long. So they do some story and world building here, and I think it's great. I'm going to be interesting. There's a lot of Marvel is like a power that gets embodied in people. Captain Marvel is just receives that power. And so did, and before her was another Marvel. At least that's my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure there's some minutiae there that might change the nature of it, but so she gets her power because she has that element, that something that allows her to embrace that power. So it'll be interesting to see the story. And I've never read the comics about Ms. Marvel, but it is an MCU character, so let's see what happens with that. The next article is in the Word in Tech. U.S. Department of Agriculture approves release of tiny wasp that targets destructive fruit fly. After 12 years of research, a parasitic wasp that controls a highly destructive fruit fly will be released by Oregon State University agriculture scientists in June. So the moment that I saw this, I thought of that song about, I knew an old lady that swallowed a fly. I don't know why she swallowed the fly, and so kept on like putting things in to get things. And that's what I see about this. So this is a tiny wasp that attacks invasive spotted wing Drosophila. And it's kind of like, do you want some ecological disaster? Because this is how you end up with an ecological disaster. Like introducing snakes into an island and you end up being overrun by snakes. In one part of the world, we're trying to get rid of one thing and we end up with another thing. So at any rate, this is a phys.org article by Oregon State University. And I'm not sure what it's sitting on. The picture here is the tiny wasp pondering your demise and how many times it's going to sting you. Anyway, Von Walton, extension entomologist and professor in the College of Agriculture Sciences, said the U.S. Department of Agriculture has permitted release of the wasp, Gynaspis brasiliensis, a slow process that took more than 10 years from application to decision. Now they have a permit. Walton's lab, which is part of OSU Agricultural Experiment Station, is raising enough wasps to make a dent in the spotted wing Drosophila population in Oregon. So I guess this is a big problem. Damage from the invasive insect cost the country's agricultural industry approximately $500 million. Especially disquieting is its affinity for blueberries, which is Oregon's ninth most valuable crop at $120 million in 2020. Management of spotted wing Drosophila in the blueberry industry alone cost growers $100 million a year nationwide. Well, we'll have to monitor this too. I'm sure it will be fine, right? It'll be fine. Let me do something here real quick. Okay, so the next article is over in the Daily News Show, facing huge inventory, Target cuts vendor orders and prices. So we're in the middle of inflation, right? So we're in the middle of inflation. This is kind of like, this might be similar to the idea that a global climate change concept and localized weather being bad or great is not one and the same, and there is no real correlation or causation there. It just is. We have seen global warming, and we do have great local weather today. That doesn't mean that there isn't a climate issue, right? Well, that might be applied here, but I don't know, because it says here, it's an ABC News article by Ann D'Incenzio, and it's titled Facing Huge Inventory, Target Cuts Vendor Orders and Prices. So Target is canceling orders from its suppliers, particularly in home and clothing, while slashing prices of goods in a bold move to clear out mounds of unwanted inventory ahead of its critical fall and holiday shopping. So this is a standard thing that businesses go through. If they understand their seasonal cycle, they end up doing something like this. But this is apparently notable enough for ABC News to do a report on it. And so Target is canceling these orders from suppliers. But if you are, maybe your buyer just picked really bad stuff and nobody wants it. Well, Target reported last month its profit for the fiscal first quarter tumbled 52% compared to the same period last year. So where is the inflation? It's not in this sector. It's not in this. Why? I'm not sure at this point, but the cost of getting goods shipped around, blah, 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 have increased because of diesel fuel costs, oil costs going up. Yet they have record profits. Target does not. My statement about it being akin to the global warming issue is because we're in an inflation trend right now, yet that high amount of money chasing too few goods and services doesn't apparently impact Target and this particular sector of home goods, because they are chopping the orders. So I guess people aren't really buying it, and they're chopping prices. So people don't even find the items of value as much, because there's not enough demand. So there isn't too much money in the system going after too few goods. It just, it doesn't play out well, at least not in the way that I am reading the tea leaves, and pretty much everybody is reading tea leaves at this point. So Target declined to give a dollar amount of merchandise orders that are being canceled and the depths of the discounts. Apparently it's going to be a system-wide change. Target now expects its second quarter operating margin rate will be roughly 2%, down from around 5.3% it had expected last month. For the second half of the year, Target expects an operating margin rate of around 6%, a rate it said would exceed the company's average fall season performance in the years. Well, I think that the Fed might have something to say about that, and I think that the profiteering that's taking place is going to kind of, it's going to impact what buyers are purchasing, because they can no longer afford to just go out and buy something from Target, because they, their cost for food is pulling people away from this, from Target. They're spending it more on the food side. So let's go look at how much food at Target has gone up, because there are grocery store sections of Target. I guess not all of them have it. I'm not sure. But shares of Target Corp fell 9% to 145.3 in pre-market trading on Tuesday, and the stock of other retailers retreated with it. Walmart, Nordstrom, Macy's fell between 2 and 4. And I think that's entirely because of inflation. So the next article is KFC branches in Australia have started using cabbage in burgers and wraps to make up for the lettuce shortages, a report says. So KFC Australia has started using a mixture of cabbage and lettuce in its burgers and wraps, per the BBC. The fast food giant cited shortages of lettuce caused by flooding across Australia this year. Australia's food supply has also been affected by global food chain and COVID-19 related issues. Over the last month, Australia has been getting kind of hammered, and I've met a few in the chats of streamers, you know, that are from Australia, and talking about how they're getting kind of crushed, or flooded, I guess you could say, with bad weather. So this is an article over at businessinsider.com, and it's by Abby Wallace. And I think this is interesting, because it, depending on what the outcome is, if it's received or well or not, this cabbage, it can offset and change the dynamic of food. Because for me, I think that cabbage and lettuce are almost one and the same. It's a little bit, it's heavier, it's thicker, and it's not as leafy as lettuce. But if we change the nature of things and we become more accepting as a population, maybe we can shift away from even the burger part of burgers and wraps, wherein we're not eating meat from fields, you know, from cows. We can synthesize this, get less animal based, but yet still get the protein. So I like changes like this, so that it gauges just how receptive populations are. This one is kind of like flies in under the radar, and you've no idea really until you focus on one bit that you're chewing on and go, oh, wait, this is cabbage, not lettuce. But I thought it was interesting that they're making this change, and I think they're making this change formerly, quietly. You know, they're not sitting there announcing to everybody, hey, we're stuffing our burgers and wraps with the cabbage. The fast food giant said on Monday that flooding across New South Wales and Queensland meant that it had to substitute the traditional lettuce filling with a combination of cabbage and lettuce due to ongoing shortages. That cabbage is more robust, I suppose. Now, this would actually be somewhat mitigated if there were hyper-local growers. So a warehouse that grows lettuce inside, protected from the weather and processed with fewer external influencers, right? Not just the sun and poor weather and then flooding and soil management and whatnot. You can do it hydro. You could either do it hydroponically or you could find other ways of doing it. There's plenty of ways, but you would need basically a warehouse that is built to support possibly one major location. But you can grow very dense lettuce and other goods vertically. And it takes up a smaller space. It's nearly impervious to insects and other issues. You can control for mold and other things. The crop that you would end up with is more robust. It's larger than out in a field because it's not susceptible to damage. So when you get it, it's even more beautiful than a field-born product. So I'm always a proponent of that. I think that's where the future is as weather starts impacting crop yield. Not to mention fertilizer costs and other things, and fertilizer in general proprietary solutions that are not renewable, right? Like I can always grow more from the material that I'm growing now, right? I can always get more seeds from wheat and grow more wheat. I can always grow more lettuce. I can always grow blah, blah, blah. The problem with some crops are that they are one and done. Needing a particular type of seed, needing a particular type of fertilizer. It's penning us into something that we are no longer as the consumers in control of ultimately. So let's continue on to the next article before I end up soapboxing too long. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Uber Eats enters DoorDash and Goldbelly's turf by launching a nationwide shipping of gourmet foods from 4 U.S. cities. So starting June 7th, Uber Eats customers can get free nationwide shipping from top food merchants. Last year, DoorDash started nationwide shipping of gourmet meals from merchants like Carlo's Bakery. Uber Eats and DoorDash are now competing directly with Danny Meyer-backed Goldbelly. So let's click this link. It takes us over to Business Insider, and Nancy Luna is the author of this article. And it says, last year, Uber Eats and DoorDash are now competing directly with Danny Meyer-backed Goldbelly. I'm not sure. Let's see if there's anything interesting in this article beyond that. So the four cities are Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, and Miami. What else? Merchants offering shipping via Uber Eats are Bloodso's Barbecue, Gotta Have S'more, Dreamy Creations, Western Bagel, Lala's Argentine Grill. I don't know if that's Letty or Letty Macarons, and The Pie Hole, all in Los Angeles, Sarge's Deli, Juice Press, Waffles, and Dingy's? I don't know what that is. All in New York City, Sergio's, George Stone Crab, Doggy's Arepa, and Sabora's Market, all in Miami, and Stirred, Not Shaken, and La Fromagerie in San Francisco. So there's more to the article. Go over, follow the link, and go through Hometown, and you'll land here in Business Insider Nancy Luna's article. The next article is about Apple. It's in the Word in Tech, though. And not smack talk. Apple announces buy now, pay later. It's largely because it's a business article from BBC. Apple announces buy now, pay later among iOS 16 plans. The tech giant introduced a controversial service as part of its iOS 16. There are some people that are really denouncing the buy now, pay later type of program, mainly because it pulls a person away from the liability, the immediate liability of having to fork out a large sum of money. But I don't see it as really a problem, as long as the people that are using it are well informed about the actual cost of this. While this plan has no interest rate, it has no fee associated with it. It's just a service. There are issues related to this. So let me just reiterate that this article is over at the BBC.com website by Tom Gerken. And I'm sure that they'll end up talking about it more. It says Panorama reported in December 2021 that an estimated 15 million adults of all ages in the UK are actively using Buy Now, Pay Later, with the main operators offering the service in the UK being Klarna, Clearpay, Laybuy, and PayPal. The issue here is cognizance of the fact that you're carrying a debt that has a payment plan to it. And what you end up doing is you pay every 2 weeks a portion of whatever that remaining, well, what that burden was. So if it's $1,000, you're paying four payments of $250. But people forget that, and they end up going, oh my gosh, now I'm in the hole an extra $250 for the next 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, for what amounts to, it says here, 6 weeks. So depending on when you pay, you end, or when you initiate it, you'll end up paying 2 weeks, then 2 weeks, then 2 weeks, with an initial payment. And you won't have any interest or fees. And sometimes you can drip that payment out. So if you can, then do it. I see no harm in it, as long as the people are cognizant of that burden and they don't just pile on again and again. Well, I have an extra $250 or $1,000, you know, because I don't have to pay all of it immediately. No, you really don't. You should set it aside and pay it. The next article is in the Warcrafters channel. Apple mimics Microsoft putting speedy SSDs to work in games. I don't really like the phrasing of this, but because Apple has always had very fast infrastructure in its product offerings. So, for instance, the MacBook Pro from 2015 was the fastest SSD that I have seen. Its throughput, its bandwidth was quite expansive compared to other SSDs that were in place. And it was proprietary, and their Thunderbolt deployment was superior to other solutions, even though it was a standard solution in terms of footprint. Their particular proprietary build of it was superior. And I think that they'll end up doing the same thing with other similar solutions as time goes on. They've even taken the processor and melded things so tightly together, future-proofing it to the point where you can get a chip that is double the size built with the intent of doubling its size. In its initial design, which is spectacular. So it says over at Apple's WWDC 2022 event, the Cupertino company announced a handful of new gaming features coming to its Apple Silicon powered Macs. One was Metal FX upscaling, its very own feature to rival AMD and NVIDIA's FSR and DLSS offerings. But the other sounds exactly like Apple's own version of Microsoft Direct Storage technology. Direct Storage is a storage technology created by Microsoft and set to be utilized by NVIDIA and AMD with their respective RTX IO and Smart Access storage technologies. It's essentially reroutes assets from your speedy storage drives, bypassing the CPU and sluggish APIs, straight to the GPU for rendering in a frame. And this is more about bandwidth and infrastructure, linking everything together. So I don't know about mimicking. This is a technology that has been around. Direct storage was originally a Windows 11 only feature, but it has since been announced. It is also headed to Windows 10. There are likely other requirements for direct storage, likely a supported GPU and a fairly speedy SSD. Well, there are some extremely fast M.2s coming down the pike with the next iteration of PCIe. We're talking about 13 gigs compared to 5 right now being pretty much peak. This article is by Jacob Ridley over at PCGamer.com. And that's pretty much the summary of this. They go into greater detail, of course. I encourage you always to go over and read the articles to get the minutiae out of it. And I don't know. Come back and argue with me about it. Tell me how wrong I am. Let me know your thoughts, and happy to discuss it. So the next article is over in the Warcrafter channel. There's a new Just Cause in development. I did not think that this was going to actually come into existence. It says, during the financial results briefing in May, Square Enix, or Enix, Stealth announced that a new Just Cause game is on the way. The briefing document addresses Square Enix's $300 million sale of several overseas studios and IP, including the Deus Ex and Tomb Raider series, and outlines what the publisher's intentions are in the future. So the primary purpose of a reorientation of our portfolio, writes Square Enix president Yosuke Matsuda. We especially revisited our studio and title portfolios from the perspective of stepping up our offering of online titles that we develop for the North American and European market. We want to focus on creating new titles that align with our strategy, including ones that leverage new IP. The Just Cause franchise will remain our IP, and we are at work developing a new title in that franchise. So, wonderful. Let's go over to PC Gamer, and Rich Stanton is the author of it. This was a fun game to watch people play. I didn't play it. I tend to be in certain games the person that watches over the shoulder and is like, "Hey, this is pretty cool to watch," and that's kind of my take on Twitch. I love watching people play games on Twitch. And let's see here. It says, they got a couple of more paragraphs, but it says, last year it made $394 million in profit, even if whatever Matsuda is saying, it does keep banging on about the blockchain way too much, according to this author. Yeah. I don't know. Not a big fan of blockchain NFT stuff. Okay, so the next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Ben & Jerry's galvanizes customers to lobby for tighter gun laws after Texas and New York mass shootings. I cannot go a day, it seems, without hearing about mass shootings somewhere in the United States. Ben & Jerry's has called on its 8 million Facebook fans and 515,000 Twitter followers to lobby lawmakers for stronger gun safety laws. Ben & Jerry's is pretty pervasive in terms of where their product is. You can't go to a store without bumping into a Ben & Jerry's product. Let's see. This article is by Brian Schwartz over at CNBC. It says the House of Representatives is set to vote this week on a gun safety bill. The ice cream maker also plans to cut ties with vendors who have worked with the firearms industry. So if they can, then they're standing up for their beliefs. And business is made of human beings. So if they are still in charge of their enterprise and they feel that it's necessary to do this, then so be it. I do think that business itself, the business enterprise itself, should not be involved in politics. However, The individuals within it, sure. But no business should be speaking about politics as a business. The individuals, yes. But the business itself, no. I don't think that businesses should donate money to political campaigns. I think that that should be verboten, forbidden, not allowed. Why? Because the business employs thousands of other people, potentially. And when a business is injecting its politics out into space, then it is supposedly speaking on behalf of all of the employees. But then it takes the employee to have to educate somebody on what their politics are, and that they have to separate themselves from the enterprise when you find out that you are working for whatever company. Let's take Elon Musk and SpaceX and all of their employees. So if SpaceX is out there campaigning politically, right, as SpaceX donated this, SpaceX donated that by way of the people that are steering it, that means that when I bump into somebody from SpaceX and I talk about something that's contrary to whatever campaigning was done by the people who are driving SpaceX, that person might have to feel compelled to expound on their difference between their particular political perspective and SpaceX's political perspective. And without a doubt, the perspective of the SpaceX as a corporation enterprise culture is going to be decidedly in favor of the ones that are steering the company. So therefore, it should be the individuals that are doing the donation and the political speak and not the corporation itself. No, there should be no personhood for corporations like Citizens United implies. At any rate, so Christopher Miller, the head of global activism at the ice cream company, said CNBC is in an interview that the company has called on its 8 million Facebook fans and 515 million thousand, sorry, Twitter followers to lobby lawmakers for stronger gun safety laws. And therein lies that rub, right? So they're speaking on behalf of the company to motivate the followers to do something about gun safety laws. But all of the people that are within the corporation, within the company, do not have a part of that voice. And they will, if anybody inside the company says anything counter to this messaging, I suspect that they will get some downward pressure to either change their mindset or move on. Oh, and they even talk about billionaire Elon Musk told CNBC he wants tight gun background checks in an open letter published. So it's the individual. Elon Musk can't stop, but it doesn't seem to be able to stop throwing out tidbits. But I guess we all do, right? I'm doing it now about my perspective. I'm not a billionaire, though, so I guess if you're interested in the financial value being the important element about deciding somebody's opinion, I guess stop listening. Okay, so the next article is in the Word in Tech. Polestar's first electric SUV will officially debut in October 2022. The Polestar 3 marks Polestar's attempt to break into the highly competitive and highly lucrative SUV market in the US. When it comes out, it will slot into the premium category, putting it in a competition with EVs like the Tesla Model X, Audi e-tron, Mercedes-Benz EQE, Rivian R1S, and Fisker Ocean. And let's click the link. It takes us over to The Verge. Andrew J. Hawkins is the author of this article. This is more crossover-like based on what I'm looking at. Has a neat design, Sporty. It says the Polestar 3, the aptly named third vehicle from the electric performance marquee, will have its official reveal in October 2022, the company announced, and it'll be Polestar's first sports utility vehicle. I don't know, this looks more crossover. Let's scroll down and see. Polestar has only released two other vehicles so far, the $155,000 hybrid coupe Polestar 1 and the Polestar 2 sedan. In addition to the Polestar 3, the company is also planning on releasing a compact SUV, the Polestar 4, in 2023, and the Polestar 5, nay, Precept. Really? Sports sedan in 2024. Yeah, they're all going to be in that high price. The company also unveiled a sleek roadster concept called the Polestar 02 and is putting its high performance vision of the Polestar 2 into limited production. Yeah, so $180,000 car, probably, if not more. Anyway, that's that article. The next article is that Apple's AR headset will slip into Q2 of 2023, according to Quo. Pretty prolific. We all hoped, and by we all, I mean anybody that is interested in AR, VR, all hoped that Apple would drop an AR headset this WWDC. Unfortunately, that did not happen. Let's see, the tweet is, I guess, Quo believes Apple's AR/MR mixed reality headset shipping date will postpone to second quarter of 2023 versus the first quarter of market consensus because Shanghai lockdown interrupts the development. As expected, there's no clues for AR/MR headset at WWDC, and they offer up a prediction of the schedule. So I'm going to click the link. It'll pull us over to Apple Insider, and William Gallagher is the author of the article, basically relating what the quotes from Ming-Chi Kuo are. So they're talking about engineering validation and testing starting from Q3 2022, Apple event in January, SDK toolkit by end of February 2023, pre-orders, and so on. With this delay, I've never been one to predict because you just never really know. And it doesn't do any good, really. I mean, what are you going to do? You're not going to pre-order something. And if you don't have the money readily available, then there's other concerns. Pardon me. Sock away $1,000. I hope the predictions of it being in the $3,000 range is not true. Okay, so the next article, I'm gonna move on. The next article is in the Steel Series. It's in the Warcrafters channel, but it's about Steel Series Aerox 5 Wireless. When it comes to gaming mice, pardon me one second. I don't know what's happening to me right now. The Steel, so in the Warcrafter channel, SteelSeries Aerox 5 Wireless. When it comes to gaming mice, the current trend seems to be lighter the better. This allows for easier movement, less fatigue, and a nice low number of bragging rights to put on the number. Mouse makers around the world are finding ways to shed a few extra grams with especially true wireless gaming mice. Given the extra weight added by the battery, still companies like SteelSeries are doing their best to get the weight down. I'm just going to click the link because what I'm going to really do is rant about the fact. Oh, first off, I really don't like the skeletonizing of devices. Oh gosh, it makes it so much harder to clean. Fine, it's great that it makes it more grippy, it makes it lighter, whatever. I don't care about that stuff. What I care about is being able to clean my devices. When they offer up like this, skeletonized, I just want to walk away. Anyway, it says that it's It got a 75 rating. I guess it's out of 100 over at PC Gamer. The article is by Hope Corrigan, and what they're for is light and easy to pick up and move, clicky with accurate responses from buttons, glide smoothly, comfortable for multiple game styles. I'm not sure what that means. And against not the longest battery, a bit long, so some buttons are hard to reach. So here's my thing. This is the only reason why I really even clicked on this is to show somebody the new SteelSeries Aerox 5 wireless, and to rant a little bit because I really don't like mice. Right now on my desktop, right, I've got a bunch of monitors, I've got a bunch of other electronic devices and speakers and paperwork and other things. Yes, some of my stuff is paperwork. I got a drone sitting over there, a candle. All kinds of sanitizer over here, a device that I'm actually manufacturing sitting right here, and it's in stealth. Been humming away over here on my desk. Mixer, Stream Deck, iPad, iPhone, another laptop, drink, stuff, right? What I don't want. Oh, a split keyboard sitting here, right? And my microphone is sitting right here, right? So it's on a low profile mount, and what I don't want is a big old mouse pad taking over my desktop. And I don't get mice anymore, right? I have an Ellicom Deft Pro trackball. It's wireless or wired. I happen to have it wired. Here, I'll even show you. This is it, right? And the level of fidelity that I have can be tuned up or down, and I can move my mouse with great ease, and not mouse, trackball. And I think it's got like 11 buttons on it and a scroll wheel that's programmable. It's great. Except that it has a really crappy switch on it right now, that double clicks, and it's a known problem in its manufacturer, and I'm really irritated because I took it apart and did a thing. I did a bearing swap on it, and I'm using ceramic bearings, and it's difficult to do somewhat. It's kind of a pain in the butt, but at any rate, so I did the swap, and now several years later, this switch is starting to go bad and double click. And apparently, it has something to do with the amount of voltage that it can handle, based on me running around looking for a solution to this, because it isn't the software. At any rate, I like being able to clean my devices so that I'm not getting them funky with Cheeto dust, right? All of us gamers and streamers, we all eat Cheetos while we're gaming. I don't. I typically don't have food here. But at any rate, this Aerox has all of these holes all over it, and that means that it's collecting funk. And so you'll have to take it apart to clean it on the inside of it. Right? Anyway, let's continue on. The next article is over in the Warcrafters channel. If NVIDIA's next GPU can somehow live up to the hype, they'll make the RTX 3090 look slow, which I love. It says it's difficult to get precise figure on historical gen-on-gen performance increases, though a good example was the jump in performance NVIDIA achieved when it introduced the GTX 10 series, the 1080, which is what I've got now. It was a quantum leap forward, and then the RTX was a quantum leap forward. And now we're talking about the 40 series. If the 40 series adequately trumps the 30 series, we might see a price uptick again. But right now, the prices for GPUs has dropped, and it's because there is effective competition. And manufacturing has picked up again, and supply chain issues are being addressed adequately. So it says, has NVIDIA found something truly revolutionary? The author wishes they knew. And the simple answer is that it's too early to tell. And that's always the case. And it's why I'm not a big fan of rumor and talking about it from a rumor perspective. I waited to talk about WWDC largely until after WWDC's keynote in terms of hardware. I had a couple articles that were talking about it, AR and VR elements, simply because I'm really interested in AR and VR. At any rate, this article about NVIDIA's next-gen GPUs, which I hope live up to the hype, but I was disappointed by WWDC 2, so I'm kind of braced for impact. This article at PC Gamer about NVIDIA is by Chris Sezwick. I think it's pronounced Sezwick, so if I'm wrong, Chris, just tell me. Love to have you on the show. I'll put you right up there. We can talk about PC Gamer. As we draw closer to the launch of NVIDIA's next generation of graphics cards, expected in Q3, the possibility as soon as August, it's inevitable that hype begins to build. The usual leakers fire off tweets every other day, proclaiming a tidbit, performance estimate, feature, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's the nature of the beast. And advertising and reporting pretty much are built on it. I'll even go so far as to say that there are people that, sorry to reach back into the old bag of worms, but it's related to Amber Heard and just Johnny Depp thing. There are people that are railing against streamers that pivoted to cover cover the trial. And so there are these other reporters that are basically saying, you know, I'm going to go pee on my bush. This is my turf. You're just happening to chase after clout and whatever, but you know what? It doesn't even matter. We're all talking about the thing, whatever the thing is. So, man, it's just so frustrating that people get like that. You know, we're all talking about it. We all basically have an opinion. Some people are willing to talk publicly about it, and it doesn't make you any more or less of a journalist. You know, I think it's more, it's more courageous to hang your own shingle and be your own boss than it is to work for somebody, because the amount of risk and the amount of care that you have to take in growing your reputation, growing your business, growing everything that you're doing, it's all on you and your shoulders. And can you weather that tide? A lot of people can't, but when you start out in a virtual space, you know, I've been doing this we're coming up on 6 months. Well, we are at 6 months now, not wholly 6 months. I'm in the 6 month mark right now. And I haven't even hit my first goal. Look, that follower goal, that right there, I won 100%, and I still don't have it, but I'm not running around hyping it up. I'm also not on YouTube, streaming, which, I don't know, depending on when I stream and what I stream, I could get some mass amounts of attention. I'm just not doing it. So some people are doing it right. I guess I'm doing it wrong. Talking about news in general from the perspective of business, technology, and society, I guess maybe it's just too broad. But I'm interested in a broad number of things. So if you're interested too, come over to twitch.tv/ohmtown or go over to YouTube and watch some of those and like and follow it so that I come over to YouTube live as well. I'm willing to do it, but you know, I'm not running around a lot. I'm only doing a 1 hour show too, so people apparently don't find value in it. So here comes the NVIDIA 40 series, which I will probably end up getting one because I am now three major generations behind. So the next article is over in the Mobile Channel. Email shows fake Trump electors in Georgia told to conduct plan in secrecy. This is basically reinforcing my statement that abuse happens in the dark. You don't find people abusing other people in broad daylight. No, 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 no. Behind closed doors, in the dark, shadowy processes where you're abusing somebody. And I'm going to rephrase this title where it says email shows fake Trump electors in Georgia told to conduct plan in secrecy. It really should be email shows Trump fake electors. So take possession of them, because we all know that this was a plan to overthrow the U.S. government. And all of these people that are worried about their guns being taken away from them fail to realize that in a fascist environment, you're going to have your guns taken away from you unless you're on the fascist side. So you're showing your true colors here. You're saying the quiet parts out loud. And to me, every accusation is a confession. And so when it comes from that side, this is purely all about fundamentalist extremism and the creation of a theocratic fascist plutocracy. So that's the first time, I think, or maybe the second time in 6 months that I've said this. And we're going to see this. We're going to see this play out in 2024. And it's a real shame that people are picking a side this big. I'd rather have ambivalence and everybody just status quo than making a shift like this into what could be the failing of democracy. You think you have you don't have a voice now, folks. Just wait. So the Washington Post and CNN reported Monday evening that the email written by Trump campaign Georgia operations director, Robert Sinners, instructed the fake electors to tell security at the state capitol that they had appointments with two state senators. And you have to ask, they have to ask for their complete discretion in the process. Yes. Because you don't want transparency in a democracy, right? No. Yeah. Anyway, this article's over at The Hill. It's by Monique Beals. And, you got to say what it is. I mean, this is not this is not fomenting democracy. This is a plan, an effort to overthrow the government. And for me, I think senators have too much power. 100 people are controlling a third of the government, whereas representatives are not. The rest of Congress is always growing, a number of people, and their power dilutes with time. But senators, it's absolute power. And we know what happens with absolute power. Anyway, it says your duties are imperative to ensure the end result, a win in Georgia for President Trump, but will be hampered unless we have complete secrecy and discretion. But again, it's beyond arm's reach. It was the campaign in Georgia operations director, Robert Sinners, committing the sin. Let's move on. The next article is in the Stock Marketeers channel, Wall Street Journal. Kohl's in advanced talks to be sold, valuing retailer around $8 billion. So I've gone into my Kohl's periodically because I'm doing a return for Amazon. And without a doubt, I have seen it just kind of stagnating. And I'm not quite sure anymore what will happen with Kohl's. They aren't advancing to the point where they're selling tchotchkes and, you know, on table, folding tables outside the front door, which seems to be the case for many businesses that are on their way out. They have been increasing, at least anecdotally, near the Kohl's near me, lining the aisles with racks, like industrial racks, stocking racks, not normal clothing racks, but for stocking. There's always clothing lined up in these little, in the walkways. So instead of broad, wide open walkways, paths through the store, you've got them kind of kludged up with product. So I think that's like a step towards, you know, selling tchotchkes on folding tables. Anyway, so it's roughly valued at $8 billion. But they've got a lot of real estate, and I think that is where the value is. This is a MarketWatch.com article, and let's see if I can find it. They've changed the way that my aggregator grabs a link. So let me see, where is it? Now, what a way to end the stream, my goodness. Wow. Sorry, folks. Maybe I'll just end it now instead of just idling silently looking for, yeah, I don't even see it anymore. Whatever. Okay. I'm going to just move on, but I'll throw the link in there. So this is an article from the Wall Street Journal, but it's throwing me over to MarketWatch, and I don't see the actual article, so maybe you'll find it when you go over there. Yeah. Okay, well, sorry, folks. Okay, with all that in mind, I am done with today's show. I'm going to get out of here, and I might be back. I don't know. Might be back. The standard process is that I throw you back to the front page of ohmtown.com, and you get to see a whole new set of news. It is typical that in a 24-hour period, about 20 pages of headlines get aggregated for me, and by proxy for you too. So come on over to ohmtown.com and become a citizen of Ohmtown. Go over to YouTube, like and follow. Be sure to follow me here on Twitch. And of course, the podcast exists with its show notes and whatnot. I will eventually figure out where I need to end up. So I would like to start streaming over at YouTube as well, but let me know over there if you are interested in that kind of thing. And I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.